It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. You play a vital role in funding the programs you're passionate about here on Wisconsin Public Radio. A listener from Madison told us, thank you for all that you do to educate, enlighten, and brighten the Wisconsin community. Whatever your reason for giving, it is our spring member drive right now. If you value these interesting conversations, in-depth news, and inspiring music, you can support it all with a gift at 888-202-2552. That's 888-202-2552 or online at WPR.org. And thanks. Coming up, Governor Tony Evers signed a new COVID-19 relief bill into law yesterday and extended the safer at home orders. We'll talk to our state capitol reporter about both of those stories. First, have you ever had an experience where you felt like you just didn't fit in? You couldn't figure out the right things to say? You felt like you didn't connect with people? You had trouble making friends or relating to coworkers? Maybe your background or childhood just didn't leave you with a lot in common with those around you, or you didn't know the cultural references or social rules that everyone else around you just seems to know. Our next guest grew up trying to come to terms with what she calls her weirdness, and she turned to science and the experiences of other people who have been outsiders to learn about the difficulties and the benefits of being weird. Olga Kazan is a staff writer for The Atlantic, where she covers health and science. Her new book is called Weird, The Power of Being an Outsider in an Insider World. Olga, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on.
Can you talk a little bit about your personal experience? That was a big part of the inspiration for you wanting to pursue this concept of weirdness.
Yeah, I got really interested in what it was like to feel different and kind of the state of difference because of my childhood. I'm a Russian Jewish refugee, and I grew up in Midland, Texas, which is in far west Texas. I was really, for a long time, the only kid like me that that was around. Sort of even beyond that kind of initial phase of feeling like an oddball, like in my classes and things like that. It was just sort of a early childhood experience that really stuck with me and kind of permeated a lot of my psychology later on in life. And kind of some of the things that held me back, but also kind of carried me forward. So I really wanted to look into what that was all about and what is it like to be a fish out of water and what's the psychology behind that. So that's when I started reaching out to other people who had different, but similar kind of experiences of being unlike everyone else around them, to kind of learn from them and learn what their experiences were like.
And choosing the word weird as your title, I think ends up fitting really well because it's a double or maybe quadruple edged sword. Some people embrace weird as a positive thing. Some people, I think, recoil from it. And you see that whole range of experiences in the people you talk to.
Yeah, totally. I mean, most of the I talk to people who were, for example, like a male preschool teacher or a liberal living in a really conservative environment or a conservative living in a really liberal environment. Weird is often something that people say in a kind of insulting way toward people they don't agree with or who they think are different. But I was kind of trying to reclaim it and say that, it can actually be a good thing to be weird and that we shouldn't shy away from the label quite so much like we do.
There are downsides, and they're big and small depending on people's experiences. One thing that really struck me, it was a group of, I think, faculty members at a school said, hey, for the next week, we're going to take turns. One of us is going to be ostracized. We're going to pick that one person. They're going to have, I think they actually had a scarlet O, right? And we're going to be mean to them and ignore them and dismiss them. And even though everybody knew it was just kind of an exercise, it felt really terrible. What did you hear from that that intentional experience of weirdness?
Yeah, so this is just a really, I thought, poignant example of how awful ostracism can feel, even in adulthood, and even, in fact, when you're in on what's happening. We often think that, after, middle school or high school, people, feeling like an oddball isn't really like a big deal. But in fact, these researchers found, they would kind of label each one of their offices as with an O for ostracized for that day. And then they would know they were going to be ignored that day, but they were ignored by their colleagues that day. And they felt like it was really hurtful. You know, they wrote things in their journals like, I feel like a ghost on the floor that no one sees. And, you know, they started doing like anything they could imagine to just to get their colleagues to acknowledge them. Like it really struck them that they were being kind of snubbed and ostracized in that way, even though, you know, they knew why it was happening and they knew that it was going to come to an end soon. So that just goes to show how hurtful this kind of experience can be, you know, especially when we're like not invited to a wedding or, you know, a baby shower or something like that. That can actually be a lot more deep and hurtful than, you know, it might seem on its face.
We're talking to Olga Kazan. Her new book is called Weird: The Power of Being an Outsider in an Insider World. We'll maybe talk more about the downside of being weird and meet some of the people that, you met in the course of researching this, Olga. But I want to look at some of the upside, too. And you found, as you looked into the research on this, having, say, outsiders, the weird people in a group, on a committee, whatever, could actually lead to better outcomes, better decision making. What is behind that?
Totally. So this has been a consistent finding in psychology that having someone who is kind of a competing perspective or a minority view on a team can actually help the team make better decisions. They keep you, they help you avoid the sunk cost fallacy, which is this idea that like, we should follow through with this bad idea to the end, just because we've already started doing it. You know, people are less likely to kind of follow along with groupthink, and with obviously bad decisions. If there's just one person who's willing to say, hey, wait a second, I don't know about this. You know, that person does risk looking like a outsider or like someone who's unusual, but they actually help the whole team kind of triumph in the end. One quote from the researchers, some of the research that I read was defiance per se, the explicit flaunting of a majority's claim for truth significantly reduces the grip of conformity on observers, which I thought was a really powerful, you know, defiance per se, you know, testament to the power of weirdos.
And another benefit may come in the form of creativity. How does that work?
Yeah, so this has also been kind of been held up in studies, which is this idea that people who have traveled abroad or in a culture that is not like their own or have even just been rejected socially tend to come up with more creative solutions to problems. And the way they tested this is actually having volunteers come into a lab and then rejecting half of them. So kind of saying like, you guys are not going to work with the group on this one. So they kind of felt like, oh, what did we do? We're kind of like outsiders here. And then they would have everyone draw these aliens. They were supposed to be from a planet very unlike our own. And it turned out that the people who were rejected actually drew more creative looking aliens than the people who were included, because they sort of felt like, you know, I am already not part of this group. I already don't have to impress them. You know, I don't need to follow any rules. I can just kind of throw spaghetti at the wall and come up with whatever. So it kind of just shows you how, even though it might not be necessarily fun to be kind of the odd one out, it can definitely let those brain juices flow and help you come up with creative ideas.
That's drawing Martians in this lab experiment. Do you see that playing out kind of in the real world? You and or the many people you talk to who were in one way or another outsiders harnessing that that for creativity?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been like definitely smaller level things where I have, you know, like come up with creative ideas. And, you know, I can never be sure if it's because I had this weird background or because just of something else. There are a few interesting examples from history, Nabokov wrote Lolita when he was traveling, and Picasso started experimenting with cubism when he was living abroad. Not in his native culture. So there is kind of this benefit to kind of being a fish out of water that can help you kind of come up with new ideas. And that's definitely something I saw in the people that I interviewed too.
We're talking to Olga Kazan about her new book. It is called Weird, The Power of Being an Outsider in an Insider World. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you felt like an outsider at some point in your own life in ways big or small? Do you or did you feel different from the people around you? What do you think, if anything, you learned from that experience? Did you see a positive in that? Did you find ways to make being weird a positive thing in your life? Did you at some point find your people who were outsiders in the same way you are? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up that conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Olga Kazan. We're talking about her new book, Weird, The Power of Being an Outsider in an Insider World. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you now or have you ever considered yourself to be weird, maybe an outsider in a group, a school setting, work, a community, whatever it might be, where you stood out for one reason or another? What was that like? What were some of the biggest struggles? In what ways, if any, has it helped you in your life? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Olga, I want to talk some about strategies that different people have adopted in this situation of being an outsider, being seen as weird. And one is kind of a power through strategy. And I hope you could share the story of this doctor. He's now at Johns Hopkins University. And he was looked at when he was applying to medical schools as not a likely prospect. Can you tell that story?
Yeah, I was just so inspired by this guy's persistence and perseverance. This is Michael Ain. He's a surgeon, and he has short stature. He has dwarfism. So when he was applying to medical school, it was still kind of an era where there was this expectation that doctors would look a certain way and act a certain way. Really the fact that he was short was holding him back. People were outright saying, you know, patients won't respect you, you know, they want, tall, imposing doctors. And so he was rejected from something like 30 medical schools. And he just kept going. He applied to the 31st after he was, you know, rejected from 30. And the same thing happened when he started applying to surgery programs too. And I was just so kind of, inspired by him because I don't know that many people who would, you know, not be discouraged by that or take it as a sign that they weren't going to make it, and instead just be even more motivated to break through. And so I kind of started the book with him because I just remembered talking to him and was like blown away by his spirit. And he actually ended up making it to Johns Hopkins, which is of course one of the best hospitals in the country, and became like a renowned surgeon who actually helps kids of short stature and helps them with their spinal and kind of bone issues. So he kind of came full circle and ended up helping other people like him.
Another strategy you talk about is, you know, finding similar people when that's possible, finding people in your situation. What kind of stories did you encounter along those lines?
Yeah. So, you know, I really just found that even though, you know, by their nature, these folks are living or working in situations where there's not going to be a lot of other people doing their same thing. But what they do is they kind of build communities of supporters around them. So in the case of Julia Landauer, this really great NASCAR driver that I followed for a while, she really has a really supportive family. Not necessarily like financially, you know, she still has to hustle and get out there and raise money for her own racing, but her family is just very morally supportive. They come to a lot of her races. They help her with coaching and like kind of give her tips and strategies and feedback on how she's doing. So I felt like she really had this like crew of people who were like rallying around her and like helping her out. And so she kind of, I feel like that kind of helped her, weather this really tough profession, not just for the racing, but just like the financials of NASCAR are really hard to make work, apparently. I was really impressed by her ability to do that. And then, you know, the other thing I noticed is just like people who would find friends who are really supportive of their decisions. I interviewed this one, they're called Choice Moms. It's like women who have a baby on their own without getting married first. So they'll just have a sperm donor and have a baby that way. That's like a decision that is often like frowned upon in some cultures. But this woman who had a really great experience doing that actually, you know, had her friends over and they all picked the sperm donor together. And it was like this big party and they all celebrated it. And, you know, like her whole like community was like, yay, you. And that definitely makes it easier to make those kinds of decisions when you have that kind of community.
Let's bring on our callers now at 800-642-1234. Julia is with us in Heartland. Julia, hi.
Hi, hello.
Hi, what do you want to tell us about, Julia?
So just as part of, I guess, my destined path that I just decided very early on in high school was that I was going to get into metal fabrication and welding, which is definitely not something that is meant for, you know, women. And it's definitely a weird path that people just decide very early on. And I definitely got some flack for it in the beginning of my path on going into being a fabricator. I definitely got some men who were definitely trying to show me up. But it was definitely one of the best decisions I've made, even though it wasn't a traditional path for somebody like myself. And I've definitely been able to make these incredible things and teach other people and just get them also inspired to join, like, the fabrication and manufacturing field. And it's definitely something that was so worth going into something that was just untraditional for.
And Julia, let me ask you, was there something you think that helped you get through those earlier stages when you were facing that, you know, the rejection, the men, as you said, trying to show you up and that got you to where you are now?
I think just the challenge of it and just being told, like, you're not really going to make it. Like, you can't really lift steel. You can't really weld as good as I can, and just that challenge of, yeah, you think this, but let me show you that you're wrong, was really what kind of pushed me to just be better than where I started.
Thanks a lot for sharing that with us, Julia. Olga, what do you think?
Yeah, she reminds me a lot of this woman, Michelle, who I interviewed, who became one of the only African-American female law partners. There's like very few of those, and then actually then became head of the NBA Players Association. But she, her whole life was told, you know, you're never going to make it, you're not good enough, because she was this very high achieving African American woman from a poor neighborhood, and she was just completely driven to show up her haters and to show how awesome she was and to like blow everyone out of the water and to, have everyone's jaw drop after she kind of shows them up. So that can definitely be a huge motivator, is this this desire to be better than the people who doubt you.
Thanks a lot for sharing that, Julia. We'll go to Lenny now in McFarland. Lenny, hello.
Hello. I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and went to a really good one of the 10 deaths. High schools in the country at that time. And then I went for my sophomore year to Purdue, where I had terrible culture shock. And the girls I was with initially thought I was weird, and I thought they were dumb. And I enjoyed when they needed me to tutor them. Making remarks that I have reduced this concept to its irreducible minimum. I don't see what you can't see, but I would say the worst.
Letty, thanks for calling in. Are there ways you can see, Olga, that we can, reach across that mutual sense of weirdness when we're in a new place?
Yeah. I definitely think that, so this is something that one of the psychologists that I interviewed mentioned is that if you go into a situation anticipating that people will like you and that they'll have a good reaction to you, that can actually help kind of generally improve the nature of the interaction. Like it's a little bit of a subconscious, like people can kind of tell when you look like you think that they're not going to like you. So, you know, if you just go in kind of expecting the best and expecting things to go well, then they generally will. So I think that might be one strategy, is just to realize, hey, you know, I'm a little unusual here. I'm not from around here, but, you know, we are going to find something that we have in common, and I'm going to, you know, have a fine time here. Could be just a good mindset to try to rehearse, even though it's can be difficult at times, I realize.
In just a couple of minutes before our news break, and we'll keep talking after that, do you have thoughts for the non-weird part, the insiders, to, you know, check themselves and think about how they react to the outsider in their midst?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think like, and it's been a good thing, you know, society has gotten more open-minded, I think, in the past few years. And like, even one of the people that I interviewed, she was this sociology professor who was fairly liberal, living in the most conservative congressional district in the country. And she found that it became kind of easier to interact with, and you know, students knew more about some of the subject matter she was teaching, just because society's become more open and accepting. So students would know about things like the glass ceiling, or they'd be familiar with the concept of feminism, or, you know, they'd be familiar with the concept of gender identity going into the semester. You know, that wasn't necessarily something she had to like introduce for the first time, whereas, you know, maybe 10 or 20 years ago it would have been. So I think in general, society's becoming more open, which is definitely making it easier on all the weirdos out there.
We're talking to Olga Kazan about her new book. It's called Weird: The Power of Being an Outsider in an Insider World. Still time for your calls at 800-642-1234. Have circumstances in your own life made you feel like an outsider? Maybe you're a part of a racial or ethnic minority in your part of the country. Maybe you moved from a small town to a big city, or vice versa. What are the negatives? What are the pluses of being the weird one? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation with Olga. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll talk about a new COVID-19 relief bill that was signed into law by Governor Evers yesterday. Now we continue our conversation with Olga Kazan. She's a staff writer at The Atlantic. Her new book is called Weird: The Power of Being an Outsider in an Insider World. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you had an experience in your life feeling weird, feeling like that outsider? What challenges were there? Were there ways in which it helped you? It was a benefit? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll go back to your calls. Rana is with us in Cameron. Rana, hello.
Hello, Rob. Well, thank you for taking my call. I was telling your screener that after I graduated from college, I with a degree in meat animal science, I wasn't able to find a woman at that time. But anyway, I was hired by Farm and Fleet, and I became one of the, I was the first woman in their management training program. And that was a bit of a strange experience because there was no one around that looked like me. After I worked there, I went into back to school and got my teaching degree in ag education. And again, this a similar experience. I was one of the only females back in the day teaching ag education, and also shop classes such as welding and construction. And what I've learned from it was that there's always going to be people And so anyway, I always kind of felt like an outsider, kind of a weirdo, I guess. There's always going to be people that want to work with you because they want to be successful. And if you want to be successful, that'll show in your actions and your comments and your leadership that you bring to wherever you are. And so then you work with the people that want to be there, that want to work with you, and the others, they're just missing out on a great opportunity.
All right, Rana, thank you so much. And Olga, that reminds me of a category in your book, and a couple of our callers and people you've mentioned fit this category, the trailblazers, the people who are willing to be that first odd one out, and maybe other people follow suit later.
Yes, and the cutest example of this was the first people to try online dating. Of course, now we think that it's so common and that anyone would do it, and we're all meeting on OkCupid or Tinder or whatever it is. But when it first started, this was considered like something you would only do if no one, you couldn't find anyone any other way. And so these people were getting on Match.com in, the late 90s and sending each other emails. And they couldn't actually send each other photos of themselves because internet connections were not strong enough to upload a photo at the time. So they were sending each other photos through the post, through the mail. And, all their relatives thought, that they were going to get axe murdered the second they met up. They're both still married and they're very happy. And I think that kind of feeling of being kind of an innovator and a trailblazer and willing to do something a little unusual is actually something that kind of attracts them to one another. It seems like they kind of like that about each other, that they were willing to kind of go out on a limb.
Wasn't it they were both willing to meet somebody within a 500-mile range, and they did the math and they lived 499 miles apart?
Yes, I thought that was the craziest. That just so happened. They didn't even realize that they lived that far away from each other at the time. So, yeah, it was lucky for them.
Talking to Olga Kazan about her book, Weird, The Power of Being an Outsider in an Insider World. I want to visit one story you tell from here in Wisconsin, where a county that a lot of people around the country paid attention to because it was a big swing county in votes, Trumbull County. Can you talk about what you learned when you talked to a Mexican immigrant named Gloria that you interviewed?
Yeah, so I interviewed a few individuals in that county who had immigrated, and I just want to say they all said they had built a good life there. For the most part, people were very accepting, but it just kind of spoke to some of the tensions that that people feel whenever they're an immigrant or an outsider, because it seemed like when they first got there, they were sort of kept at arm's length, not fully integrated because they didn't necessarily speak the language or whatever else, but ultimately they were able to be accepted. But then there got to be more and more immigrants in that area. And there was sort of an influx because of things that changed in the economy and with immigration patterns. And then there was actually a little bit of a backlash to immigration there. And there was kind of this local sentiment that, well, now we have too many immigrants and we need to do something about that. So actually, after voting for Obama twice, that county went for Trump in 2016, in part because, political researchers think there was this sort of backlash to the wave of immigrants. So I talked to some of the immigrants who were part of that wave and sort of how they experienced that.
Yeah. What did you hear about how they felt about being, living through that change?
Yeah. I mean, they were hesitant to be critical of their neighbors. But one thing that I thought was interesting was that even these really young immigrants who are basically dreamers, they're essentially, they've grown up in America, but they are technically not citizens. They had a really strong affinity for Mexico and really spoke Spanish, enjoyed watching kind of Mexican shows and had dreams of returning to Mexico to live, even though they had grown up in the U.S. And I wonder if some of that isn't reacting to some of this immigrant backlash that they've experienced, this sort of feeling that well, if you're not fully comfortable with us, we're going to kind of be more closely tied to the place that is more central to our identity. And I actually saw that with my own parents, too. I feel like they're more closely connected with Russian culture, even though they've lived here for more than 30 years now.
You look at some of the sociology when it comes to conformity or acceptance of difference, and there's a real continuum from one society to another or one community to another. And made me think we've got kind of a two-pronged thing going on here in American culture where so many of our pop culture heroes are, you know, the outsiders, the rebels, the bold thinkers who get things done. And yet we've got a pretty heavy conformist streak mixed in there at the same time. Is that weird here in the United States, or I don't know? I guess you'd need a huge international study. But what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So the difference you're describing is between tight and loose cultures. So tight cultures are those that have a lot of rules and a lot of they have a lot of conformity. There's like a certain way to do everything, a certain way to dress, a certain way to behave. If you think about religions like the Amish, that's a tight culture. They kind of mandate everything you're going to do your whole life. A loose culture is like Burning Man, right? It's like, do whatever you want. There's no rules. You can dress however. You can, you know, do whatever. So I think different parts of America are different kind of levels of tight and loose. I think a lot of the kind of renegade heroes that we have come up in Silicon Valley, which I think is like a pretty loose culture. It's startups are a very loose culture, and it's just full of startups and technology companies, which just tend to be more freer to those kinds of like creative types. So even if you're like the CEO who screams at everyone and wears the same thing every day and like, you know, whatever else you're going to do that's like really unusual, that's going to be more accepted in that loose culture because, you know, that there already aren't a lot of rules that you have to follow. So I think that might be part of what you're seeing there.
I want to wrap up looking at the unwritten rules that can make it hard for that outsider to figure out how to fit in. And you write about your own experience with this, I think, in college, you know, not being part of the high school culture in the past. You didn't know, for example, the rule for how to end a conversation. Can you talk about how hard it is for that outsider to suss out the rules that everybody else knows but can't necessarily even explain?
Yeah, I mean, that was like an extreme experience of mine. Like, I just didn't have a lot of, my parents never had anyone over, and I never had really like formal conversations before I went to college. You know, I think day to day, people experience this with office dress codes or office, you know, speech or office. So I used to work at the Washington Post, and one of my first days, I went to this meeting, and I sat in like the wrong chair at the the meeting, and I sat in this chair that was really important for someone like really high up. And you know, it's just like all those little subtle things that you don't realize, but that everyone else realizes, you know, you don't necessarily pick up on. But you know, there's like so many of these subtle rules, just like RSVPing to a wedding and what do you wear to a wedding, and you know, what do you do when someone says this or that, or what do you say when your boss asks you to do something? Like there's just a million ways that we these kind of codes that we follow in order to make everyone around us more comfortable. And for people who are weird, those codes can be really difficult to learn.
Olga, we'll end the conversation with me thanking you for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on.
That's Olga Kazan. She's a staff writer at The Atlantic, where she covers health and science. She joined us for a look at her new book. It's called Weird, The Power of Being an Outsider in an Insider World. Still time for you to share your stories on the Ideas Network Facebook page. And you can support conversations like these by making a gift during our kind of soft-spoken spring member drive. You can give now at 888-202-2552 or online at WPR.org. Coming up, we'll get the latest on two big pieces of news on COVID-19 in Wisconsin, a relief package passed by lawmakers, and an extension by Governor Evers of the Safer at Home orders. That's up next on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, kids are out of school, but the studying hasn't stopped. We'll talk about a program at three Wisconsin colleges where undergraduate students are volunteering to tutor K-12 students online for free. First, Governor Evers signed new relief legislation as the ongoing COVID-19 outbreak keeps people at home and many businesses closed for the foreseeable future. And today, the governor extended safer at home orders past the initial deadline with some changes, allowing for more business activity. Laurel White is the state capitol reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio. Laurel, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, as often happens, a lot has happened since we called you to ask you to join us, Laurel. Let's start with the newest news, Governor Evers extending the safer at home order toward late May. What do we know?
So we know that the order that was set to expire next Friday, I believe, April 24th, is now going to be in effect until May 26th. So a pretty lengthy extension there through Memorial Day weekend. There are a couple changes to the order, kind of small tweaks. For the most part, it's going to look the same for folks kind of living their day-to-day lives in this new reality. The changes include a specification from the governor that schools in Wisconsin, K-12 schools, public and private, are officially closed for the rest of the school year. He is also opening golf courses, kind of an interesting twist there. We know that that's been something a number of lawmakers and groups have been calling for. So that's going to be something that's going to go in effect after the current order expires. So these little changes won't actually happen until after next week. We're still going to live under the exact same rules right now until April 24th, and then the new order goes from the 24th until May 26th. A couple other things that actually might affect people in their day-to-day lives, non-essential businesses, you know, we talked about those essential businesses, non-essential businesses are going to be able to open back up under some basic operations and offer curbside pickup to customers. So that's obviously on a case-by-case basis for individual businesses, what's possible for them, what's doable for them. But that's something that folks can kind of keep a lookout for in their community, places that they haven't been able to shop from since the first order went into effect might be kind of slowly opening back up.
And you've been watching for reactions to that already today. I've been following you on Twitter, Laurel, as this breaks. What kind of things are we hearing?
Well, we're hearing some really strong pushback from Republican lawmakers in particular. They're very frustrated with the governor. We've heard kind of smaller, quieter to a certain extent pushback about the stay-at-home order for a little while now, people expressing concern about the effect on business and that the governor has potentially, in their view, gone a little bit too far in restricting things at the expense of businesses across the state. I think that has been amped up to just level 10 or 11. Since this new announcement was made. Republican lawmakers in the Senate, I think in particular, have said that the governor is really moving kind of out of line here. This is too much of an extension. They think that the legislature needs to be more a part of these decisions being made. Actually, Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald just put out a statement probably 10 minutes ago saying that the Senate is looking into possible legislative or legal action, a little bit of a kind of tipping of the cards there, potentially that there could be a lawsuit over the governor's power in terms of, you know, whether he's able to, you know, continue extending these orders and how long they can go on.
And we've seen on the East Coast a group of governors getting together to coordinate their efforts to reopen the economy. We've seen it on the West Coast, and now we've got a good chunk of the Midwest plus Kentucky getting involved. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if we know how that's going to work yet, but there's something in the works, Laurel?
There is. This is really interesting. We got a press release about this today that a coalition of Midwestern governors are all coming together, in their words, to sort of collaborate and stay in touch about reopening the regional economy. And some of kind of the tenets that they're prescribing for each other in terms of when states are going to lift their stay-at-home orders, what that's going to look like. It's a bipartisan agreement. You know, we have, I think, governors Ohio, Michigan, Minnesota, Illinois, Wisconsin are all involved. So there isn't a ton of nitty-gritty. You know, everybody is going to make every decision with each other in lockstep. But I think this is a sign of you know, kind of attempting to have a broader look at the economic impact that this is having, not just on the state of Wisconsin, but the entire region as people are traveling from, you know, Minnesota and Illinois, crossing the border, doing things. We know that that's been a major area of concern for folks as our stay-at-home order and other stay-at-home and shelter-in-place orders have gone into effect on a rolling basis across our region.
We're talking to Laurel White, WPR State Capitol reporter, looking at the latest news here in Wisconsin about how the government is approaching the COVID-19 outbreak. Laurel, let's get to that relief package now passed by the legislature this week, signed into law by the governor. What does this thing do?
So it does a number of things. There are kind of different sections that you could divide it into. I think one of the big important sections has to do with insurance. So under this law, insurance providers in Wisconsin have to cover testing for COVID-19. They are also barred from discriminating against patients, consumers that have had COVID-19 previously, have it currently, or may have had it, kind of similar to that pre-existing condition legislation that we've seen come out of the Capitol in recent years. There's also a provision that requires insurance companies to cover treatment provided to individuals out of network and covering those out of network services. I think this is something when you get into the nitty gritty of it and kind of play out a scenario, say someone's in-network provider was at capacity and they needed to get medical care. They couldn't go within their network to get that care. Because of this new law, they can go out of network and they're not going to pay those, you know, steeper prices for doing so under kind of the normal scenario that we would see kind of in pre-COVID-19 days. Outside of the insurance stuff, I think the big thing that we've been talking about a lot in the Capitol and outside of the Capitol in recent weeks is unemployment insurance in Wisconsin. So under this new law, there's a temporary lift on the 1 week waiting period for unemployment benefits in Wisconsin. That would be lifted retroactively into March and would exist until February of 2021, this next coming February. So that's a really big thing that's aimed at getting benefits to folks more quickly as we see unemployment rise really precipitously in Wisconsin.
And Laurel, this thing passed pretty overwhelmingly, only two no votes in the whole of the legislature. The governor signed it pretty quickly. And it seems like a lot of people are saying this isn't perfect for various reasons, but they wanted to get something done fast. Is there talk about more stuff coming along to follow this up in the future?
There could be. We know that's something that Governor Evers really wants. We know that's something that Democratic lawmakers really want. That's something that they mentioned in the albeit limited floor debate on this new law when it was, you know, in the legislative process. Senator Fitzgerald mentioned that that could be a possibility for lawmakers to come back and kind of, you know, address some additional things that could be done by the state to respond to the pandemic. But we don't certainly have any concrete idea of, you know, when that would happen or what proposals would be exactly. So that's something that we're going to have to keep a really close eye on. We know that lawmakers are existing, as everyone is, in a very unusual place right now. This was their very first virtual session this week. Some people were physically present at the Capitol, but most people were, you know, participating via web software. So they might want to get to a place where people could gather physically when they voted again. We're just going to have to keep a close eye on it.
And very briefly, Laurel, because of all that, we got a unique insight into the living rooms of many lawmakers, right?
We did. It was kind of surreal. I know folks out there probably doing video conferencing for their jobs are seeing into their coworkers' homes. It was a little surreal to see into lawmakers' homes. I joked on Twitter that you get a little insight into, you know, people's decorating choices, wall paint color and artwork and things like that. I think a little moment of in these dark times, looking for some of the little fun things that we get to experience that are different now.
Laurel, thanks a lot for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Laurel White is the state capitol reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio. She joined us today to talk about the COVID-19 relief legislation signed into law yesterday by Governor Evers and today the governor's extension of safer at home orders. You can support this kind of news coverage here on Wisconsin Public Radio and all the other conversations you hear. Make a gift during our spring member drive right now. You can call 888-202-2552. That's 888-202-2552. Or give online. It takes just a few minutes over at WPR.org. Wisconsin Life is looking for your studies, your stories. So I thought I'd share a message from them to you. This is from Wisconsin Life's Maureen McCollum. She says, "Hi, friends. What random acts of kindness have you experienced lately? Are your friends and family lending a hand to help out? Maybe a neighbor or a stranger has put a smile on your face. We'd love to create a Wisconsin Life story on Wisconsin Public Radio with your stories. Email a voice memo on your smartphone to maureen.mccollum@wpr.org or leave a message at 608-263-4121. Maureen says, thank you and be well. I'll repeat those contact numbers and emails in just a minute. You can also reply to her message on the Wisconsin Life Twitter handle or follow Wisconsin Life over on Facebook and leave a message there. That would be great if you could help out and join in. Have you been inspired by someone in your community, your family, doing something nice? Has someone done something nice, big or small, for you during this whole COVID-19 thing we're going through? Have you seen community leadership happening, neighbors helping neighbors, that kind of thing? Again, you can email Maureen, maureen.mccollum@wpr.org. Call 608-263-4121 or check out Wisconsin Life on Twitter or Facebook. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.